front of that little church. You know what those old overhead hanging fixtures were like. It was comfortable and familiar. In fact, it reminded me a bit of my mother's little Norwegian country church outside of New Richland, Minnesota. Yet it was strange, too, here in rural Mississippi. Hot and a bit dusty. Big double doors halfway up the wall behind the altar that puzzled me until I snuck around and found the little stairs out of the sacristy up to the immersion baptismal font. I was sitting at the table with a half dozen or so workers who had been at the center of the organizing and contract campaigns at the Levi Strauss Distribution Center, about a half mile from the church. This little missionary Baptist church was where we met almost every day sometimes. Over the previous 16 months or so, we had spent untold hours together, every day after work and on weekends, first working to win a union election and then in a year-long fight for a contract. This little team was exhausted, but also celebrating. They had a union and a contract, something that had seemed impossible many times along the way. But as I looked across the faces, I realized again that they were wise beyond their years. Having seen and participated in a great deal as part of the African American community in central Mississippi through the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, things I could really only imagine beyond some of the stories I'd been told. Jackie, the youngest of the group, but still a decade older than me, asked a question that has stuck with me all these years. "Isn't it frustrating," she said, "isn't it frustrating to work so hard for things to be like they should be anyway, and then have to settle for less?" The prophet Isaiah and his peers inhabited those same between spaces. They were social critics and reformers, comparing the world of their day on the one hand with the world as it should be, the world they could find in God's intent for creation. As they made that comparison, they found a vast gap. Their words, Isaiah and his peers, were marked by that threefold cycle of lament for the deep brokenness they could see, clear proclamation of judgment on all that is crooked and distorted, and a profound call to the life-giving straight path God intends. And finally, when the weight of all that is distorted and broken seemed just too much to bear, like it would crush his people, Isaiah and others spoke words of hope and promise, reminding their community of the faithfulness of their God. Here in our text from Isaiah 11, in a time of great fear and injustice and uncertainty, Isaiah reaches hundreds of years back and reminds his people of the promises to David and to his father Jesse and of God's faithfulness. "A shoot from that stump, from all that seems dead, is coming," he proclaims, "a branch from roots long dormant." While Isaiah wrote this long before to a social and political crisis of his own day, John the Baptist and the early followers of Jesus found in these words a lens through which to see Jesus, to understand his ministry and his call. Hearing it again in Advent, our season of preparation, it provides a beautiful description of Jesus as we have come to know him. "The Spirit of the Lord shall rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. His delight shall be in the fear of the Lord. He shall not judge by what his eyes can see or decide by what his ears hear, but with righteousness he shall judge the poor and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. But then there is that moment in the text where it shifts from the aspirational, the hoped for, maybe even the glimpsed, to the fantastic. The wolf shall live with the lamb, the leopard shall lie down with the kid, the calf and the lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. The cow and the bear shall graze, their young shall lie down, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. While we hear fulfillment of the first part of Isaiah's prophecy in Jesus, while we can see it and taste it at least in glimpse, this portion of the text is a world we do not still recognize. It doesn't get any more familiar as Isaiah continues, "They will not hurt or destroy on all my holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea." Here we find and feel and taste this gap again, this veritable chasm between verses 5 and 6. If this root of Jesse came in Jesus, how come this world, Isaiah goes on to describe, is not the world in which we get to live, the world in which we find ourselves? Instead, our world seems still full of hurt and destruction everywhere we turn. Not only do wolves not lie with lambs, but we are deeply afraid and suspicious of each other. We don't know how to talk together. We often can't even agree on what's wrong, much less how to build a better world among us. These paths Isaiah and John call us to make straight are still wandering and crooked and crumbling. Injustice is all around. So what are we to think? What are we to do this Advent 2019? I suppose the simplest would be to just make that kind of classic leap and assign the second half of the text to the world of the future, the reconciled future, the second Advent, the waited for reconciliation when Christ comes again. But I don't really see any justification in the text for that move. But what if instead this is proclamation and call? What if this part of the text is prescriptive rather than simply descriptive? What if in this text our God is calling us and all who follow Jesus to this different way of being in the world? What if we are actually supposed to try to live like this? What if our call is to welcome the stranger, to make ourselves vulnerable even to the perceived enemy, to risk danger on behalf of a reconciling God? What then would Advent look like? How would our world and our presence as the community of faith in it change? Who are the wolves for us? Or when might we be the ones with a taste for lamb? Who should we be in relationship with that we never thought possible, that seems positively dangerous? Where are those nests of snakes that we must not fear to visit? What will we do to stop the hurt and destruction that sometimes even occurs in the very name of this Jesus? Here on God's holy mountain, in God's holy neighborhoods, we who follow this little child live deeply both in the now and the not yet, in this uncomfortable space between. We desperately long for Christ coming again into our lives this Christmas and Advent, and even the final reconciliation of our broken world. But we who are Christ's hands and feet also live in the now of a world into which Christ has already come, a world beloved of God and filled with God's Spirit, a world that desperately needs us to risk vulnerability on behalf of both the wolf and the lamb, the friend and the stranger. With Isaiah and with John, we proclaim both judgment on all that is twisted and distorted in God's beloved kingdom, and a clear hope in the never-failing promises of our loving God. And we long and we work for straighter paths, for deeper relationships with all of God's beloved, for a healed world, indeed for the day when they will not hurt or destroy on all my mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord, as the waters cover the sea. On that day, the root of Jesse shall stand as signal to the peoples. The nations shall inquire of him, and his dwelling shall be glorious. Thanks be to God. Amen.